and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The National Hurricane Center says Milton is expected to be a dangerous storm when it reaches Florida. CBS News meteorologist Nikki Nolan.
The newest forecast track shows landfall over Sarasota, Florida, after 2 a.m. Thursday morning, as it has slowed down over the southern Gulf of Mexico.
An Afghan national is arrested in Oklahoma for allegedly plotting an Election Day terrorist attack. CBS's Rob Legere.
The defendant and his co-conspirator, who appeared to be his brother-in-law, were consuming ISIS ideology and professing their commitment to that cause.
A new book by Bob Woodward says former President Trump secretly talked to Russian President Putin several times after he left office. Russian expert Beth Noble says if true, especially after Russia invaded Ukraine, it would be
a humongous breach of protocol for any former American leader to do that at a time of an act of war.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. President Biden in Milwaukee Tuesday with a plan to remove all lead water pipes in the United States. Here's Stuart J. Waddles.
President Biden was back in the Bruce City, once again talking up his efforts to remove lead water pipes. Biden unveiled a plan to force big cities to replace their lead water pipes within 10 years.
What's good for our health and for our environment is also good for our economy, and it's good for jobs.
The deadline includes $2.5 billion in new spending from the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act. With the president in Milwaukee, I'm Stuart J. Waddles, Civic Media News.
The top four vote-getters in this year's Coolest Thing Made in Wisconsin contest move on to the final round. The field started out with 130 nominations. You can vote for the finalists for another week. The winner will be announced a week from Thursday in Madison. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
Hi, I don't call radio stations very often.
Your calls are the best calls.
And keeping you inspired and informed is part of the Civic Media vision.
Thank you very much for broadcasting the Liz Cheney question and answer. I really appreciated that, hearing her voice, and for you to broadcast it like that was wonderful.
Listen to the Liz Cheney interview now on our website, civicmedia.us. Real news and great conversation.
Find it on your local Civic Media radio station and the app.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Matt Nair on air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. I want to start off by saying thank you to everyone who has reached out and just said the nicest things and the best wishes, prayers, thoughts, vibes, all of that stuff. Thank you. My family really appreciates it. And from the bottom of my heart, you know, thank you. This is a tough time for our family, but you guys are making it a whole lot better. So I wanted to throw that out first before I get into what I came for. Because, look, as everyone knows, I've been a Teamster my entire working life. So when I see the Teamsters president, Sean O'Brien, go on the Theo Von podcast recently wearing... Now, look, I think going on the podcast is a great idea. You go out there, even though Von leans pretty far right, I wouldn't put him in the crazy category. I see him more about the laughs, more about entertaining than about ideology. But again, I don't know. I don't pay that much attention. And look, I agree. Take the message to the people across the board. Doesn't matter. But my problem is he wore a T-shirt that said Teamsters versus everybody. And look, he's trotted this out before. And look, I'm guessing maybe this is going to be the SOB exclusive clothing line. I don't know. Maybe O'Brien learned something about merchandising from Trump when they had their secret powwow back in January. Don't know. But I do know, I mean, you kind of wonder why the DNC didn't let you speak. But, you know, this frame of Teamsters versus everyone. is literally, in my view, the dumbest thing O'Brien's done. You know, even dumber, yes, than speaking before the RNC, praising Trump as one tough SOB with a spine and all the nonsense there. But it's this normalizing of Trump's record. It's this normalizing of divide and conquer wealth class messaging. And I think it is much more destructive, in my honest opinion. This idea of us against the world. Because here's the thing, the labor movement has always been that place that believed in, you know, an injury to one being an injury to all. What happened to that? What happened to solidarity forever? What happened to united we stand, divided we beg? What happened? What happened, Sean? Did Washington change you? I mean, because I heard his RNC speech. He said he's seen Washington change people. I got to be honest. I've talked to people who've known him as a very long time. Not the same guy. Something's changed. Sad reality is, in my view right now, Sean O'Brien is the half of the working class that Jay Gould would have paid to murder the other half. And, you know, I look at his non-endorsement and pushing for a non-endorsement in this presidential election, which could be the pin that unleashes the Trump grenade. And you go, well, why does it matter? I recently had a UPS teamster, younger guy, honestly ask me why it matters. And I said, look, right now you work for a company that's heavily unionized. Your industry is heavily unionized because you keep it that way. You're out there trying to organize. They've been trying to organize other places for a long time. And right now the Teamsters are doing amazing work on Amazon organizing and organizing the people who deliver the packages. And the only reason that that can happen, in my view, is because of Joe Biden's NLRB. What Jennifer Abruzzo and those people did is reverse all of the horrible that Donald Trump did. And you look at the fact that on September 30th, for instance, the National Labor Relations Board issued a complaint. And they allege that Amazon violated federal labor laws as a joint employer. Remember back to the Obama years, this came up during the Obama years. The first thing Trump did was end this. Now understand, they're organizing all these drivers. The NLRB right now in their complaint is saying that Amazon is interfering, restraining, and coercing drivers who are exercising their Section 7 rights under the NLRB. Understand, that's only because of the joint employer rule that Trump will most certainly, without question, end. The reality is Amazon has discriminated against employees who wanted to unionize. That's happening. And they are currently refusing to collectively bargain, not just in good faith, but I would argue in any faith with the union. So when you have, remember when we had Palmdale drivers on here? They were part of this delivery service partner group. They were Battle-Tested Strategies was the name of the company. And they're a third party. They don't work for us. No. Even though Amazon basically says what they have to do, where they have to do it, what they have to drive, where they have to drive, what clothes, you know, the whole nine yards, don't spiel. And you had the NLRB in Los Angeles ruling in favor of those drivers. You also had in Atlanta not too long ago, the Region 10 director there made a merit determination that the workers at this MJB LLC, a DSP of Amazon, that they were a joint employer and that they were employees who were seeking to unionize with the Teamsters. And I go, but Rick, why is that important? It's important because when Donald Trump becomes president, unless there's something that happened at that January meeting where Donald Trump and Sean O'Brien did the thumbs up picture, I'll be honest, my initial impression of it being a hostage video, I believe was more accurate. But what happened there, I think is instrumental in what we're seeing now. Because understand, I don't know if Donald Trump told Sean that, yeah, we're going to keep the joint employer rule. You're going to be fine. We're going to help you. We're going to help you. We're going to help you with Amazon. While Jeff Bezos and Donald Trump's buddy, Elon Musk, are trying to overturn the National Labor Relations Act. So you can go, but Rick, you know, maybe Sean did cut a good deal. Maybe he's labor's art of the deal. Maybe he's such a skilled, crafted negotiator. And look, I hope he is. I want the guy to succeed. I voted for him. He calls me tomorrow and says, Rick, I want you to help me organize Amazon. He doesn't have to ask twice. I'm there. I think either a little naive, a little maybe gullible, or there's something we don't know. Because you don't go from marching in the streets with Bernie Sanders and Sarah Nelson and being part of the broader movement to wearing a t-shirt that literally says, screw the rest of the movement. It's Teamsters versus everybody. I kind of think it's the wrong message. Because I believe as a Teamster that when we're united, when we're marching together in solidarity, when all working people are arm in arm, shoulder to shoulder, we're that much stronger. Because guess what? You know when those dock workers went on strike for a couple of days? They got a 62% raise. And the rest of the movement supported them. The rest of the movement was right there with them. I was there with them. Without that solidarity, without that union, without that backing, they're forced back to work. And without the politics, and this is, again, is where I think O'Brien made a massive failure of leadership. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back after this with our good friend Mark Weber.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Election Day is less than a month away, and if you want this kind of craziness in your backyard, maybe register to vote, maybe make a plan to vote, maybe, execute that plan and actually get out and vote. Because you may have heard me talk about Oklahoma. You may have heard me talk about their schools superintendent, a guy named Ryan Walters. You may have heard me talk about the craziness that he's been pursuing there, like all public schools being forced to teach the Bible to the children, the Ten Commandments plastered everywhere, and state-funded charter schools for Catholic schools. That was found unconstitutional by their state Supreme Court. But, hey, they keep trying. And now, this latest little tidbit, this latest bit of fun and entertainment, evidently he wants to buy 55,000 Bibles for the public school classrooms. And you go, well, what's wrong with that, Rick? They're just books. Yeah, they are. And I agree. You know, Bibles aren't in themselves bad. One, public schools, kind of interesting. But two, the requirements for these particular 55,000 Bibles that they have to have, you know, the country's founding documents in them. They have to be leather bound or at least leather like. And there are exactly one of those kind of books out on the market. And you guessed it, those are the Donald Trump Bibles that sell for about $60 a piece. The good thing is there won't be many of them. But the bad thing is it's a lot of money going into Donald Trump's pockets from the taxpayers of Oklahoma. So if you want this kind of crazy in your neck of the woods, you keep voting for these kind of people. And here to share some thoughts on the separation of church and state, public education, the common good, and what kind of future we want for our children? Well, I've asked my good friend Mark Weber to come talk with us. Mark is a special analyst for education policy with the New Jersey Policy Perspective. He's also a lecturer at Rutgers University, music teacher, and my favorite blogger over at jerseyjazzman.blogspot.com. Mark, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. It's always great to be here. You know, I just want to start off by mentioning you can go on the internet right now, and there's probably literally hundreds of sites where you can read the Bible for free, right? Why would we even think about this, right, as necessary? But it's all part of the grift, you know? And this is especially... It's especially interesting now because today, in fact, you talked about this virtual charter school, this Catholic virtual charter school in Oklahoma. Today, the supporters of that school filed a writ of certiorari in the Supreme Court. In other words, they are petitioning the Supreme Court to overturn what the Supreme Court of Oklahoma ruled was unconstitutional under their constitution. And so it's all coming to a head right now. And I think we have a pretty good idea of how, if the court decides to take this case, where they're going to go with it. You know, the fundamental question with that school was whether or not it was a public school.
Right.
And this has been going on with charter schools for a while. Charter schools want to have it both ways. On the one hand, they want to say, oh, yes, we're public schools. We deserve public funding. We should get all the advantages that any school district has. But at the same time, we don't want to be held to the same standards in terms of parental rights, student rights, teacher rights. And all of this is happening now at a time when the charter movement is actually a little bit back on its heels because it's being eclipsed by the private school voucher movement. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, it's interesting watching them fight each other because I get the emails too. And, you know, the school choice people are now going, no, my choice. And it's kind of interesting in the broader discussion on our politics, because, you know, the Trump argument for abortion is we're just putting it back to the states. The states mm-hmm. should decide this stuff. But here you have this going, no, the state decided we didn't like that. So we've already rigged the U.S. Supreme Court. Let's go back to them.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think you hit the nail right on the head with that. It is this selective kind of outrage. And so you're for... Actually, this is inherent in the whole idea of religion being in schools, that you're for free expression when it's the kind of expression that you want. But at the same time, you're against the Establishment Clause if it means that more money is going to be coming to your preferred school. Yeah. You got to remember, too, Rick, that like this is happening in a context. And Oklahoma is a great example of this. Oklahoma public schools are on the ropes, and it has nothing to do with the students. It has nothing to do with the teachers. It has nothing to do with the parents. It's a policy failure. This is a state that at best makes a moderate effort to fund its schools. It's a little less than the national average in terms of the percentage of its economy. But that's come up in recent years. There have been plenty of years where it's been lower. 85% of the districts in Oklahoma right now are looking at a teacher shortage. There are 3,000 emergency certifications for teachers in Oklahoma. There were 6,000 teachers who did not return to their jobs this past year. And if you look at the research that's been done by the folks at the Economic Policy Institute, they do great work. There is one of the, I believe it's the fourth largest pay gap between teachers and similarly educated workers. It's on the order of 32%. In other words, teachers make 32% less than the average college educated worker on average in Oklahoma. So this is a place that has been failed by its politicians. It's been failed by its policymakers. And what is their response? Oh, let's buy some Bibles. You know, this is the utter lack of seriousness in terms of turning around public education by getting it adequate resources and making sure that we respect the rights of students and the rights of teachers and the rights of parents, rather than sitting there and using schools inappropriately as government-sponsored indoctrination of religious ideas.
And the bigger part of it is, you know, you're throwing money to Dear Leader. You're feeding Dear Leader's pockets. Because, look, you can go, well, you know, the Bibles, you know, are fairly cheap. They're plentiful, as you pointed out. You can get them free on the internet. There's a lot of people go, here, take these. But the $60 ones that it's got Trump's name on it that are lining his pockets, that's what they've decided is the... are the parameters of what they're looking for. And I just find that to be more telling than the Bible itself. And look, I've known a lot of the, we need to post the Ten Commandments everywhere people. And I always ask them the same question. If you want them posted everywhere, tell me what they are. Because maybe you're the kind of person who needs them plastered everywhere just to be a decent person. And I respect that. You're honest. You can't remember 10 things to be a decent human being, and you need them everywhere. I respect that. And I might even come on board with you. And I find
it'd be nice if Donald Trump would read them every once in a while. I think there's one about coveting your neighbor's wife that perhaps he'd be interested in, but or maybe not interested in. But
no, I see. But here's the difference, Mark.
Yeah.
We're told it's a not to do list. He sees it as a checklist.
Right. There you go. it's actually this may rub some people the wrong way, but I say this as someone who was raised Catholic. It's really discouraging to me to see a Catholic charter school want to take this to the Supreme Court rather than taking what has traditionally been, at least when I was a kid and growing up, a Catholic position of render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, but render unto God what is God. Right. That the inculcation of religious views is not the job of our civil society. And in fact, we have stronger religion, I would argue. It is a stronger environment for religion if we have a civil society that stays out of it and allows people to practice freely. But for some reason, I think we've seen a shift, unfortunately, in the Catholic Church, which again, traditionally did not get behind things like school vouchers. We're starting to see a shift in that now. And again, I find it personally very discouraging.
Well, if I remember right, it's been years since I've taken a history class. But if I remember right, James Madison, when he was president, one of his first vetoes was vetoing money that would have gone from the federal government to churches, not because he thought that the churches would corrupt the government, but he thought the government would corrupt the churches,
exactly,
and that would make them dependent, and they wanted the churches to be independent, just as you pointed out.
Yeah, but I mean, we're in a different era when it comes to people who are in public life. You know, Betsy DeVos, who was Trump's last Secretary of Education, she has talked for years about, I hope I'm saying this right, the Shephelah, the battleground, and that school choice is not about having better schools or better academics or better academic outcomes. It is a battlefield for a cultural war. And, you know, she's been unapologetic about it, even if when she got into office, she kind of downplayed that a little bit. But that's always been the goal here. It has been to inculcate certain religious values. Yeah. And you can't get away from that when you start seriously considering calling a public school, a public school whose mission is to proselytize. You can't get away from that. There's no splitting the hair.
Now, let me ask you, because I've asked a lot of teachers, why'd you get into teaching?
Oh, well, for the money and the fame, Rick.
No, no, the reason I asked this, and I'll be upfront with it, is because, you know, a lot of my right-leaning friends believe that you got into to education to indoctrinate our children and make them all little liberal go-bots and you know change their gender and all of this other crazy stuff. And I find that most people got into teaching because they love children. They love watching the exploration, that curiosity. There have been a thousand other reasons, but the right has trained and basically indoctrinated their flock to believe that every educator is all about doing the things that they think they're doing, when in fact it's them who want to do the exact thing.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I can only speak for myself. I got into teaching because I was a working musician, and I happened to get involved in programs working with kids. And I it turned out it was something I liked and that I was pretty good at. And I think for most teachers, they do, as frustrating as teaching can be at times, especially these days, it is something that they take great pride in, because, you know, you really can make a difference in this field.
Yeah. And it's, well, if you listen to Donald Trump, you can make a huge difference. The kids go to school, they're gone for a couple of days, and they come back a different gender. Evidently, that's happening somewhere. I haven't seen it, but according to Donald Trump, it's rampant.
I don't know what kind of bizarre, like, what color is the sky in his world that you would even think something like that. It is so strange to me. But it's not that, like, teacher bashing is anything new. It's been around for a while. But when you add on top of it that now people want to have this cultural war in our schools, you can see why 6,000 teachers in Oklahoma didn't return. You can see why people were, for the first time in history, working teachers, a majority of them do not want their own children to become teachers. That's sad. That's really sad. And we've got to do something about it.
No, I'm with you. But
we've got to stop this.
You know, as you were laying out some of the numbers of the teachers in Oklahoma, I was thinking about the Red for Ed strikes that were going on, in which Oklahoma was hot and heavy in that. And we had a number of Oklahoma teachers on who were telling just these horrible stories of, you know, the one woman, and it popped into my head, the one woman said she would run through the parking lot at the beginning of school to get ahead of the next teacher so that she could go and pick out chairs that all of them had feet on them. That's the level at how bad the schools were funded, that they didn't even have all the feet on the chairs or a way to make sure that the chairs were level.
Again, and it points out the absurdity of what Ryan Walters is focused on. Why would you focus on getting the right Bible when you can't even get furniture for the kids, when you've got teachers fleeing the profession, when you have this anemic funding system? And then on top of everything else, you're supporting a guy who wants to do away with the federal Department of Education. The large, not that the federal funds are a large part of K-12. They're probably about 8 or 9% of the total spending. But a large proportion of that is funding that is specifically for those districts serving disadvantaged children. And that's what you want to sign on to with this Project 2025 agenda. It's specific to education. Let's defund the schools and let's replace them with private schools, where we can teach that dinosaurs and human beings live together, or we can sell Trump Bibles and maybe Trump vodka and Trump sneakers while we're at it. It's disheartening. It's dispiriting. And we got to stand up for it. And what you said at the beginning is right. You know, get out there and vote. Get out there and vote, because that's the only thing that's going to stop this.
I just had a horrible thought. And this is why I want to end this, because just my daughter is doing this Model UN thing at school, and they've got a fundraiser where they're selling wreaths. And, you know, we've got all these. When I was a kid going to Catholic school, we used to have the candles and the prayer cards and all the stuff we used to have to sell.
Yeah, I had that too. Yeah.
You know, my mind just went to, imagine a whole army of children doing fundraisers, you know, with Trump steaks and Trump vodka and Trump Bibles and Trump sneakers. Imagine the kind of money Trump could make with that.
Can you see the bake sale right now, the PTA bake sale? And instead of having brownies that Mrs. Smith down the street make, no, it's going to be, you know, Trump sneakers or MAGA hats or whatever. I mean, we're being a little facetious.
Are we?
But not too facetious. We're getting over $900 billion a year that we're spending right now on K-12. People are looking at that. They're salivating. It is a big pot of money.
Yep.
And for years, they have been nibbling and nibbling and nibbling away. And there's plenty of other reasons not to vote for Trump. I'll be the first to say that. But this should be one of them. The decimation of public education in this country is not acceptable. And we should be standing up and saying we are not going to put up with that.
Amen. Right there with you. Mark, I appreciate the time. Great talking with you. Hope you'll come back and share some thoughts with us down the road.
Absolutely. Always glad to be here, Rick.
Good stuff. Our good friend Mark Weber. Make sure you check out his website, jerseyjazzman.blogspot.com. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Want to hear your thoughts. You want Trump Bibles in your kids' classroom? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for the Todd Allball Show.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A frost advisory tonight with a mostly clear sky and a low in the mid-30s. For tomorrow, sunshine and pleasant. Highs to the upper 60s. And in the low 70s as we look on into Thursday with a mostly sunny sky. Upper 70s Friday. It's 46 right now.
Bringing a house of pain.
Backside pressure. Down he goes. Inside the 30-yard line.
To a game day near you.
Picked off by Wisconsin, and the Badgers win it.
That's how you create a program. That's how you create a team.
Join us Saturday. Wisconsin hits the road to take on the Scarlet Knights. Our coverage begins at 9 a.m. on your home for Wisconsin football.
Here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I just saw a story that in 2023, China and the production of steel by Chinese steel companies through the roof. In fact, something like more than 90 million metric tons of steel they created, which evidently more than the U.S. and Japan combined. And their exports have jumped by 35%. So basically, they're dumping cheap steel across the globe, just bottoming out prices, destroying any type of competition. And it's garbage steel, from what I'm told. But it's all about taking over. It's all about domination. And, well, pain and suffering here at home. And if you watch the VP debates, the one thing they kind of agreed on is manufacturing is kind of a big freaking deal. And here to share some thoughts on, is manufacturing a big freaking deal? Well, my next guest it is. Scott Pauls, the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, it's so good to be with you.
So we've seen this story play out time and time again. China gets themselves into some trouble at home, overproduces, and then just dumps on the rest of the world. And sadly, the rest of the world's going, yeah, sure, we'll take your cheap stuff, even if to the detriment of their own citizens.
Yeah, I mean, this has been an ongoing problem for 25 years now. And I would say it flares up from time to time, particularly when China's having economic problems, and so which it is right now. And the problem is that if we don't respond to this, like with tariffs, as you know, we have, the Trump administration did when it was in power. Biden administration kept that and has added more tariffs, actually. That's probably a little known fact. Our steel mills will, you know, go underwater, which means that we'll have layoffs, and you've seen this before. I know, you know, in central Pennsylvania, and we've seen it all over the country. And we want to avoid that at all costs because, you know, I think there's a lot of evidence that's emerged about how important it is to have supply chains in the United States. And, you know, most supply chains actually start with steel. So it's a foundational material for so much of the stuff that we depend on. And the jobs that those steel mills support here in the United States simply can't be replaced. I mean, you know, a dollar store, a Walmart, a McDonald's not going to pay close to the same wages as a steel mill does, which means the whole community is going to be poorer if that mill shuts down. So yeah, the overcapacity is a problem. I think now the only silver lining I see, Rick, is that we're way ahead of where we have ever been in the past in terms of how to respond to this and how to protect our market with tariffs and to make sure. And I think there's also a deeper understanding of why it's important to have a steel industry in the United States that now extends beyond people like me who have been talking about this, or you, to, you know, actually I think it's becoming the prevailing wisdom in both parties.
Right. But here's the thing, and this is where I wanted to get your thoughts, because for me, if you look at social media, it's become one of those red hat, blue hat issues, where if you're a red hat, you're all in on tariffs. If you're on the blue side of things, you're no, tariffs are bad. It raises prices. And still, it's that knee jerk reaction of absolutes. Whereas I'm not someone who says tariffs on everything. There are things that we should be trading with certain partners, absolutely. But, you know, in a well thought out, strategic, smart policy kind of way, it's one of the clubs in the bag. It's one of the arrows in the quiver. It's one of the tools in the box to ensure that we can maintain our manufacturing base and be competitive globally.
You're absolutely right. And you just got me thinking about I think the right way to frame with it is that it is like a, you know, it's like a meal or a dish that needs a couple of ingredients to make it work. And tariffs, one of those ingredients, but actually investment industrial policy, the other ingredient. And if you do one but not the other, you're ultimately going to have something that's very unsatisfying. It's going to be half-baked, no pun intended. It's not going to work very well. And so you need those tariffs. And that is something that, to Trump's credit, I think he understood back then. I mean, he kind of like flailed around, but he did it. But he didn't do the industrial policy. He didn't do the investment. And this is something that the Biden-Harris administration, I think, understands very well, that you have to do the investment in our own economy. You have to do that industrial policy. And you do the tariffs. And you're going to have a much better impact that way. And when you can, you enlist our allies, too, so that there's a united front around China rather than just us saying this is bad. But I think strength in numbers.
Now, again, you see this overcapacity being pushed out of China. You see all this stuff going on. September, there were 7,000 factory jobs lost across the economy. How much of that is what's going on in China? How much of it is the fact that, Federal Reserve interest rates were high? And, you know, will the recent cuts, will that help?
Yeah, I think there's probably three things that are contributing to the weakness in manufacturing jobs, even though we're seeing like a good jobs number overall, right? We've seen a pretty good ones. One is that the interest rate cut's going to take a while to impact manufacturing. It's not like a fast acting thing. It's more of a slow burn.
So yeah, that's kind of got to build the factory, right?
That's exactly right. It's going to show up. You can't cut an interest rate running and say, oh, the jobs are going to pop up. It takes a little bit of time to get that rolling. The second thing, and you just talked about this, is the overcapacity. The irony of all of this is that, you know, believe it or not, and this is true, the U.S. economy is doing really well compared to the rest of the world. Okay, if you look at our job market, if you look at how our gross domestic product is going, how our stock market is going, by almost every measure, and we've gotten inflation under control, like we are doing way better than any country around the world, which sounds awesome, right? The problem is that means that no one is buying our goods, right? Because they're all struggling with their own economies. So that hurts our manufacturing jobs numbers. And they all have way too much, like China, way too much stuff that they can possibly sell in their own market because they have weak economies. So they're trying to send it to us. So that's like the double whammy. And so it's an odd explanation, I will admit, but it is the explanation. It doesn't have anything to do with like Biden did this or Biden didn't do that. It is the fact that we have a strong economy. The rest of the world's kind of like not doing so great right now. The interest rates, Federal Reserve, that's certainly out of the president's hand, had a big impact. And so I am really optimistic that we're going to see really good things ahead for manufacturing. But it has been a tough period of time, in part because of the inflation fighting campaign of the Fed, and also just because the global economy has been blah. While we've been doing better.
I've seen some crazy commentary around the idea that, this overcapacity is going to cause another depression. We're going to have deflation, because while inflation is bad, the other way is much worse.
Deflation is not something you ever want to see, because prices come down, but jobs come down too, because no one's buying anything, basically. So that's deflation, and that's bad. And we have seen that from time to time, in our country. And that is something we don't want. I don't think we're going to see that in the United States. I mean, our fundamentals are strong.
Right. But if you listen, the reason I bring this up is, yeah, I've had a number of people who seem to think that we're going to go back to, whatever the prices were. Gas was $1.40 when Donald Trump was president. He's going to bring low prices back again. And there's this belief of my Red Hat friends that we're going to go back to, 2019 prices, yeah, and we're going to have this massive cut and basically deflation. And yeah, I don't know that that's going to happen.
Talk about taking things out of context. I mean, there was a period of time where people were having to pay to like have oil shipped somewhere for no reason, right? Because there was no demand for it.
Right.
And I don't know if you remember this or not, but it was actually a period where you actually had to pay. It's not that people were buying gas. You had to pay someone else to take the gas from you, basically, is how it was working for some of these oil shipping companies, because there was literally no demand, right, because of the pandemic.
Well,
prices were so low. It was like a negative price because no one was buying crap.
Right.
I mean, it was like, come on, people, get real. That is completely unfair.
And it's not like you can turn off the spigot. Once you tap, yeah, that well, it's coming. You got to put it somewhere. You got to deal with it.
That's right. That's right. And so it is just like, I mean, it's ludicrous to suggest that, is that it's not going to be at that same level. But, I feel, I have mixed feelings saying this, because it's important to understand how people feel about the economy. Because when you look at the data, prices are coming down. Wages are rising. In terms of that misery index, we're out of that, and people are getting ahead. But if you read the news, right, or look at the news, you're like, that's not what you're seeing. It's like the ambulance chasers, right? And so, but that's not what most people are experiencing in the economy today. Most people, from a wage perspective, are a lot better off. And prices are coming down. So, but it's just, it's why you ask people, how's the economy doing for you personally? They're like, actually, it's pretty good. How's it doing for the country? Oh, it's terrible, yeah, right? Because of the stuff they see on
the reinforcement that they get.
The hot takes on cable news that aren't grounded in fact.
No, you listen to Trump. Everything's bad. Everything's terrible. It's the worst economy ever. And I guarantee, if he wins on January 20th, he will say this is the best economy ever.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt about that. It's just convenient for them to have this narrative right now. And I'm sure you've seen the posts on Facebook that show the price of this versus the price of that without any context. And it's like, come on, people.
My favorite, I got to tell you,
give me a break.
My favorite was J.D. Vance was doing an event somewhere in Ohio, and he was talking about $8 a dozen eggs while he's standing in front of the eggs that say $2.99.
Right. Yeah. I can tell you, I just went to Wegmans and got, I don't know, two cartons of 18 eggs, and it was like $8 for 36 eggs.
Yeah.
So Take that, J.D. Vance. So,
but here's the thing, and this is where, you know, to J.D. Vance's credit, and I don't often say that, him and Tim Walz, the one thing that they seem to agree on is we need to manufacture stuff. There seemed to be kind of an agreement that manufacturing is important. And look, taking on China, you know, I just read something the other day. It said, yeah, it's not going to really matter who the president is. The machinery is moving to taking on China. Do you see it that way, or do you see it as I do? It kind of does matter who's in the White House, to where we get a strategic plan that's actually workable, doable, and not going to screw over working people. Or do you see it as it doesn't matter?
Yeah, well, it's a really good point. First of all, I'm glad that people are talking about it, right? I think that's very important, and to agree that it's an issue. And we're nonpartisan, we don't endorse, but I just want to lay out kind of like, Trump put tariffs on Chinese goods, but then he cut a deal with Xi Jinping where China was going to buy a bunch of stuff from the United States in exchange for us stopping the tariffs, basically. He wasn't going to escalate them anymore. And it ended up that China literally did not, you know, comply with any of the deal. Okay. They kept on stealing intellectual property and they didn't buy the stuff that they said they were going to buy. All right. Biden's approach on China has been, yes, we're going to keep the tariffs. We're going to get our allies to put tariffs on China too, so that we're building a bigger fence around China. Okay. And we're also going to put sanctions. We're not going to let China have access to the next generation technology that they want to steal from our companies as well. We're not going to do that. And we're going to ban certain types of Chinese applications like TikTok or other things that might present a data threat to the United States. And we're going to invest in our own economy at the same time. So it's been a much more holistic approach to how you deal with this, a much more thoughtful approach. I think that's my analysis of it, that and in some industries like electric vehicles, batteries, you know, they've raised tariffs from what Trump had, right? They've raised them to 100% on electric vehicles. So talk about trying to get ahead of the game here. I mean, that's something that this administration has done. Again, I'm glad both campaigns are talking about this. I'm glad Vance talked about it. I think it's a little harder for him to talk about some of the Biden stuff because it's been really good for his state. You know, the investments that have some both steel mills and some factories kind of come back and prepare for the next generation of manufacturing. I mean, obviously he can't admit that. But it's always a good thing when you have an escalating competition of ideas on how you can bring manufacturing jobs back to the country.
No, I'm right there with you. So the last line of questioning I've got for you, because if everybody politically is on the same page, moving somewhere in the same direction, the question then becomes, how dependent are we on China? How dependent have our big companies gotten and allowed themselves to get? And should we care about that?
Yeah, we should care a lot about that. There's a lot of companies that are still in disbelief that there's going to be a decoupling or a de-risking or whatever you want to call it, where the supply chains are going to be moving out of China. And it's going to be a hard day for them. And the Chinese government, and this is what gets me, Rick, is that in many cases are basically showing them the door anyway, right? They're showing our auto companies the door. They're saying, we don't want you here. Basically, we have your technology. We have your know-how. We're going to build our own companies now and see you later. And so it's going to happen to these other companies, but some of them are like, oh, you know what? We're going to be able to make a deal with China. This is like Tim Cook and Apple, right? We're going to be able to make a deal with China. We'll be able to work with Trump or with Harris, and we'll figure all of this out. And I think that's a mistake, because I do think that there needs to be much more diversity in our supply chains, that we're way too dependent in some goods with respect to China. But I also see a policy that's helping us, you know, gain some footing in things like those critical minerals or other stuff, or, you know, becoming more energy dependent, not only from foreign oil, but also from renewable energy manufacturing coming from China too. So we're taking those steps. We got to continue it. The worst thing in the world would be to take a step back or to listen to the people who got us into this problem in the first place. People that range from Tim Cook to Fareed Zakaria, who say, you know, we got to lean in with China again. It's a mistake to kind of pull back. They were wrong the first time. They're wrong today.
I'm right there with you. I know I said last question, but this is kind of a just sure. off the topic. How about the fact that the Broncos beat the Raiders over the weekend?
Oh, I'm super happy about the way the Broncos are playing, especially with a rookie quarterback. It seems too good to be true. Sean Payton's done a good job. They have a good defense. I love to see the throwback uniforms, Rick. Thank you so much for throwing that in there.
Yeah.
And I just want to say on behalf of everybody at the Alliance at AAM, you, Carol, the whole family, been in our thoughts and the prayers. We're wishing nothing but the best for you, Rick.
Thanks, Scott. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you bet.
Going to take a quick break, right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1871. That was the day that the Great Chicago Fire began. The fire started in a barn on the property of Patrick and Catherine O'Leary. Legend pins the blame for starting the fire on a cow. Whatever the cause, the fire spread quickly throughout the city's wooden houses. For 2 days, the uncontrollable fire raged, destroying everything in its path. In the wake of its devastation, nearly 300 people died, and 100,000 families had their homes destroyed. One person who lost her business in the fire was renowned labor leader Mother Jones. In her autobiography, she wrote about the fire destroying her dress shop, saying, quote, "The Great Chicago Fire burned up our establishment and everything that we had. The fire made thousands homeless. We stayed all night and the next day without food on the lakefront, often going into the lake to keep cool. Millions of dollars were raised by the Chicago Relief and Aid Society to help those who needed help to rebuild. While the society did provide significant aid, treatment varied along class lines. To get assistance, the working class had to prove themselves worthy with personal references. Middle-class applicants for aid were more likely to be quickly approved to get money to rebuild. Working-class people had to wade through long approval processes. Some never received that approval. The experience galvanized some members of the working class to organize for change. One of them was Mother Jones. She wrote, "From the time of the Chicago fire, I became more and more engrossed in the labor struggle, and I decided to take an active part in the efforts of working people to better the conditions under which they worked and lived."
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I got to tell you, the last couple of weeks for me have been an emotional roller coaster, you know, and occasionally, you know, it just grabs me. And, you know, Scott, you know, wasn't expecting Scott to bring up our current situation. I'm grateful that he did. Scott has been great. Everyone has been fantastic. And I want to thank everyone for their well wishes, their thoughts, their prayers, their vibes, their good intentions, all of that. You know, people have sent cards from across the country. I've sent, you know, all kinds of stuff. You know, I had people send me DoorDash cards so that the kids would have dinner. It's in these moments. And, you know, I had something else prepared, but in these moments, you gain faith in humanity. In these moments, you gain faith in each other. And for a bit, I think I had lost a little bit. And as I said yesterday on the program, if I'm taking anything from this tragedy, it is the reinvigoration of my belief that people are generally good. And that given the opportunity, they will do the right thing. Given the right, you know, moments, given the right information, you know, that if we could find that commonality, that thing that would pull us back together. If we could do that, things would be better. But I look at this recent tragedy. You look at the hurricane that hit Helene, and you look at the one that's coming. These used to be moments where we did pull together. This used to be a moment when, you know, we used to find our way towards each other. Instead of, you know, there's this frame going out there. You know, the federal government's just going to give $750 and tell these people to go pound sand. And I'm going, no, that was, you know, for immediate needs right now. Get you some toothpaste, a comb, you know, a shower, something. Right now, here, go. Even Donald Trump spreading that kind of information. And look, misinformation is bad. You know, I've been watching social media on this. And the chaos merchants, the ones who are, you know, breathlessly saying, you know, the FEMA's coming for us. They pretend like they're running from FEMA. They're sitting in their car on the side of the road. And because, you know, evidently, FEMA is going to disappear them. They're going to confiscate their stuff. And they were only out there. You know, the one woman said something about, you know, I've brought my rescue dogs. And then she, a couple minutes later, goes, you know, because I'm here to document things. I go, whoa, 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 whoa. Thought you were there to help. Thought you were there with the rescue dogs to help. Now you're saying you're there to document stuff? So which is it? And, you know, they're telling on themselves at every opportunity. But it's this frame that's out there that, you know, the government's bad. When the reality is the government is us. The people who are showing up with FEMA doing the job that our laws say and want them to do, that's us. The fact that it's underfunded, that's the Republicans. And it's interesting to me how they starve the beast. Remember, Grover Norquist and his crew wants government so small that they can drown it in the bathtub. They can drag it in the bathtub, drown it down the drain. So that when we have these big things, we cannot respond. Because we don't have the money. That's what they want. They want small, ineffective government. And it to be there to be their whipping boy. See, well, government didn't show up. When the reality is, you know, Biden was trying to get people in there early. FEMA's on the ground. And sadly, it is so bad. You know, someone told me they're using mules now to get to places. It's that bad. And you've got Marjorie Trainwreck Greene talking about how this was evidently we did this to ourselves because we can create superstorms and we can wipe places out. And you go, so we choose to do that at home? Wouldn't we do that in Russia? Isn't that how we would end the war in Ukraine? If we could do that, wouldn't we do that in the Middle East where we could just end all of that? Wouldn't we do it in a place that, I don't know, might benefit us? But that's common sense. The chaos merchants, they want you to hate your government. They want to divide us and rip us apart. In these moments of tragedy, when we should be throwing in, when we should be taking off the red hats and the blue hats and the green hats and the pink hats and going, how can we help? I've had some of my left friends and I have tried to tap it down. Who've said, well, I don't care about these people. These are the people who say they don't believe in government. The heck with them. They don't want any socialism. And I'm going, you know, the time to talk about that is when they're okay. We can rub it in their noses when they're okay. When we've rebuilt their communities, we can bring that up. And maybe we bring them around. Maybe that's how we do persuasion. By doing the good acts. Maybe how we do persuasion and get people to the side of, you know what, a well-funded, strong government that's capable of dealing with big problems, something that benefits all of us. But you don't do that by rubbing people's nose in it while they're hurting. Just my thoughts. And look, my thoughts, you know, we're going through tragedy in the Smith household. I can't imagine what the families in North Carolina and Tennessee and Florida, what people are going through. My hearts are out with you. And if we can help, we want to be part of the solution. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick@therickSmithshow.com. What do you think? What could bring us back together? Because evidently tragedy isn't it anymore. What could it be? I want to hear it. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program? Download the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Also, freespeech.org, where you get the video. Always there for you and always free. Thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick at rick@therickSmithShow.com.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248 DE, Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.